when I practiced the instrument as a boy on the small upright piano in the family room, I was keenly aware that my mother was listening. When she was in a foul mood, she listened for mistakes, gathering evidence that I was sloppy or ignoring what my teachers had told me. If she was inclined to rage, then she would descend on me and the piano, furious at my willfulness. I would try to placate her or make excuses, unless I, too, was angry, in which case we fought. The outcome of these brawls depended on her, and they always went one of two ways. She would thrash me over the neck and arms, pull me by the hair, and then send me to my room, or she would begin crying, angry that I was wasting the hard-earned money she spent on my lessons and in despair at my ingratitude. Once she pulled my hair so violently that I fell off the piano bench backward and lay on the floor, looking up at her face, contorted by fury. She fled to her bedroom and I abandoned the piano for the silence of a book. But the memory of her listening has lasted longer and mattered more than the anger, and it remains with me even today when I sit alone at the piano and make music in an empty house. She is my other ear, allergic to music that is fast, complicated, or dissonant, always listening for something simple and sweet, and even now when I play, I am aware of her eavesdropping over my shoulder. She chides me and encourages me, and even though it has been decades since I played for her regularly, I still measure my performance by whether she nods off or smiles from the other room. She loves her Chopin and the slow movements by Mozart, is happy to hear a familiar Christmas carol or We Gather Together on Thanksgiving morning. And though these things are hidden deep in a box in the attic, I know she would be delighted to hear some of the songs I made up and wrote down as a boy, happy little ditties I composed in imitation of things I heard on the radio, repetitive and cheerful. As I grew more accomplished at the piano, the music I played appealed to her less and less. She never enjoyed Liszt or Rachmaninoff beyond a few of the preludes or more lyrical character pieces. Brahms would make her say, "Oof, too heavy." In college, I was in love with the music of the mercurial Russian romantic and mystic Aleksander Scriabin, and later the Polish composer Karol Szymanowski. But the sounds they made only vexed her. Opera, which I came to love more than any other music, held no interest for her beyond a few arias made popular by Pavarotti. If I played Verdi on the stereo, she would call down from the upstairs, "What is that awful caterwauling?" And I would turn it off, wondering, where did that word come from? Over the years, her susceptibility to music was reduced to the most basic things, the familiar classics and simple pieces full of charm and tenderness. My efforts to master technically difficult passages or muscle my way through bravura display left her agitated. But when things grew lyrical, when the storminess of a Beethoven sonata subsided to a pastoral episode, or Mozart's quicksilver figuration gave way to a longer, more ardent line, then I knew she might catch the thread and be pleased with my efforts. On occasion, when I was a boy, she would call me by my nickname from another room, saying, "That's nice, Flip." And although I can no longer quite remember the tone of her voice, my mind is as well trained as a faithful dog, so that when the music is beautiful in the way I know she particularly craved, I play it all the more tenderly and still expect to be given my reward. "That's nice, Flip."